It's a good house. The foundation is solid. The retaining walls are firm. The layout, it was planned well. Altogether, a good house. But there are termites in the cellar, and something had better be done about it. I'm not trying to sell the house. It was so long ago. The property was good. A parcel stretching from the Atlantic on one side to the Pacific on the other. On the north, Canada. On the south, Mexico. And the foundation shaped from five words.
All men are created equal.
Five simple words making up the foundation. But there are termites in the house. Termites that can talk.
They're different.
Don't let them work in the same factory.
No child of mine is going to sit in the same classroom with one of them.
Termites, eating at the foundation of the house.
They're sneaky.
Stingy.
They don't dress nicely.
They're lazy.
Keep them out of the colleges.
For heaven's sakes, don't let them into the neighborhood. Property values will go down.
Do you know who the termites are talking about? Ask a particularly articulate termite.
Who? Easy. Negroes, Mexicans, Poles, Italians, Russians, Catholics, Jews, and Irish, German, Greeks, and Puerto Ricans, Japanese, and Filipinos.
Also... You want to know who this termite's talking about? He's talking about other Americans. Maybe you. The scientific people call it...
prejudice.
I call it termites in the house. But don't call the exterminator just yet. Because the experts say...
prejudice is a contagious thing. Even when it is based on thoughtlessness or misinformation, it is still dangerous.
And so it's possible that good people, people like you and me, without meaning to, are helping the termites in the house. With no intention of bringing the house crashing down around our heads, we may be helping them to take a little bite here, a little bite there, and one bite unhappily leads to another. There's a reason why I see this problem in terms of a house. Let's take a closer look at termitis.
Or prejudice.
The experts say it expresses itself in many ways.
In employment, in education, in social discrimination.
But a major battleground of the fight against prejudice is...
housing. Where people live.
When we forbid people of certain nationalities, colors, or religions to become our neighbors, it affects many other relationships.
I'm a skilled mechanic. How can I work at the plant if there's no place I can live within 25 miles of it?
Segregation in the schools is now unconstitutional. But if our students live in segregated housing...
naturally.
We forbid them to enter some of our parks, hotels, theaters, or other social places.
It would just ruin the neighborhood.
In short, one bite leads to another. How we live and where we live and who our neighbors are, that's no new question. Let's go back a bit. Say a few hundred thousand years or so.
Neanderthal. Neanderthal!
Yeah?
Neanderthal, why are you packing your best hammer in that deer skin?
Oh, look, mind your own business, will you? Chip an axe or something. Just stop asking questions.
But why are you packing your best
hammer? All right. Because we're moving, that's why.
Again? But this is such a lovely little cave. Southern exposure in that door is a little for you.
Cut it out, will you? Let's get going.
But why? Neanderthal, will you tell me this instant why?
All right, you win. We've got neighbors. New people on the other side of the mountain.
But that's miles and miles away.
Woman, don't argue with me. I just don't like to live in a congested neighborhood.
No one likes to live in a congested neighborhood. Still, in one block in Harlem, there are 3,871 residents.
At that density, the entire population of the United States would fill only one half of New York City's area.
Rents are lower there, I suppose.
Rents in Harlem run 50 to 60% higher in proportion to income than elsewhere in New York City.
Then why don't the people move out of Harlem?
Hold on. We'll come to that in just a minute. It is not a simple situation, and there are no easy solutions. But the beginning of the solution of a housing problem is to face the facts. We are a great nation and a great people, and our strength lies in the courage with which we face the facts. It is a fact that throughout the United States, in every major city, there are compounds. Compounds into which human beings are herded, locked up, sentenced to an indeterminate term of residence and close communication with congestion, disease, and inevitably, crime.
In San Antonio, the West Side Mexican slum of 60,000 is the largest solid block of underpossessed in the United States.
Look around you. You'll find the compound in your city, behind the unseen walls.
It is not unusual for 12 people to be living in a single three-room apartment.
A typical housing report.
All hall windows broken, loosened plaster on ceilings, holes in walls, rats.
You'll find the country slums, too. The settlements of migrant Mexican workers, delicately located off the main highways. Breeding grounds of disease.
In Imperial County, California, the infant death rate from diarrhea, enteritis, and dysentery is more than 7 times as high as the statewide average.
The statistic is polite, but listen to just one father.
On November 4th, he started vomiting, but stopped, and he seemed better. At 9 o'clock on Sunday the 6th, he was very bad, and we started for the hospital. Well, we aren't familiar with this area. We didn't have any money, and we went from one hospital to another. When we got to the general hospital in Fresno, they told us the baby was dead. They said it happened because our house didn't have any plumbing. He was 4 years old.
Certain groups of Americans face greater housing difficulties than others. Certain restrictions are less dramatic than others. But the fact exists that in this land where freedom is a precious heritage, millions of Americans are not free to live where they will. And the termites are happy to tell you that they should not have that freedom because they're...
Negroes, Mexicans, Poles, Italians, Russians, Catholics, Jews, and Irish, Germans, Greeks, Puerto Ricans, Japanese, and Filipinos.
The fact exists. And one bite leads to another.
Then why don't they move out?
Well, let's see what happens when they try.
Hello?
Hello, is this Mr. Wilkinson?
That's right.
I saw your ad in the morning paper. I'm interested.
Well, fine. When can we get together?
In half an hour, if that's okay with you.
Good. I'll be looking for you.
Right. I hope we can swing a deal. It looks like a good house.
It is. There's just one thing I should mention so we don't waste any time.
What's that?
There's a restrictive covenant in the deed. I can't sell to anyone, let's see... to any Negro, of course, or any person more than one-fourth of the Semitic race, including Armenians, Hebrews, Turks, Persians, Syrians, and Arabians. I don't suppose that would affect you, would it? Hello? Hello? Well, I'll be.
The restrictive covenant. The modern derivative of an agreement among owners, which once sought to exclude glue, soap, and gunpowder factories from residential neighborhoods, is now used to exclude members of minority groups. In 1949, a blow was struck against restrictive covenants.
For the reason stated, the Supreme Court rules that the terms of these covenants may not be enforced by the courts of the individual states.
In 1952, another victory was won.
Actions for damages for breach of racial restrictive covenants are unconstitutional.
The decisions have helped some, but a restrictive covenant is like a gambler's agreement. It may be unenforceable, but the signer is respected. The restrictive covenant is only one of the devices by which large numbers of Americans are kept from living in decent housing.
Yes, come in.
Thank you.
Yes?
I'm interested in buying a house in the development.
Oh, you are? They're selling at
18.5. Oh? Well, I can afford that.
I see. I suppose you want to finance this, I mean, with a mortgage.
Of course.
Naturally. Well,
Yes?
Maybe you'd better run down to the bank and check on that first.
Well, is that the usual procedure?
Usual? Not always, but I think in this case you'd be wise to go there first.
We'll require 6% on the loan.
Six? I thought 4.5 would be closer to it.
Sorry, 6. Nothing personal, you know.
Yes, I know. Okay, I'll manage it somehow.
Before we put through the loan, you'll have to present your fire insurance policy.
Well, of course. But that's a matter of form.
Certainly. But just take my advice, young man. Before you think further about this, better get your fire insurance policy.
I'm sorry, but you're just not a good risk. Not in this neighborhood.
Not a good risk? For fire insurance?
That's right. Well, look, you can look at the tables of statistics yourself. I'd like to do it, but I just can't. Nothing personal, you understand?
Sure. Nothing personal.
There's nothing personal about the racial restrictive covenant of a higher mortgage rates or the withheld fire insurance policy. There's nothing personal about the realty codes which once forbade the sale or rental of housing to members of minority groups. There's nothing personal about segregation in public housing. But there is something highly personal about being forced to live in a rat-infested, vermin-ridden slum against your will.
In 1952, in one area of New York City, there were 481 officially reported cases of rat bites.
Very personal, if the victim is your child.
In Miami, a brand new $2 million project into which Negroes had moved was condemned for public use.
Extremely personal, if you happen to be a tenant in the project.
Nearly 42% of non-white urban homes in the United States in 1950 lacked private modern bathroom facilities.
A most personal statistics. These are the facts. Facts which we must face before the solutions are found. And before we can turn to solutions, there is another fact. The most unpleasant of them all.
And we'll need another lamp in that corner of the room, George.
Right, honey. Just as soon as we're able to.
Oh, you know, it's a nice house, George. I think we were real lucky to find it.
We'll see.
What do you mean, we'll see?
Nothing really, just... we'll see.
George! George, what is it?
A rock, that's what it is. A rock with a note.
What does it say?
Wait a minute. Get out or get bombed out. That's what it says.
Get out or... George, what are we going to do?
We're going to call the police. That's what we're going to do.
We won't follow it all the way, if you don't mind. The story takes different directions, but ends almost universally in a sound. That's right. Dynamite. It seems rather an extreme way to say you don't like your neighbors, doesn't it? Ah, there's another. Actually, dynamite's a more common expression of displeasure than you'd think. Begin in 1950.
Birmingham, Alabama.
The fifth blast in 18 months.
Chicago.
Part of a wave of riots.
Warren, Ohio. Nashville, Tennessee. Atlanta.
Houston.
St. Louis.
Dallas.
Kansas City.
Los Angeles. Sacramento.
Norfolk.
Louisville, Kentucky.
The list is long. Of course, that's just dynamite. We haven't touched on arson bombs, stoning, or shotguns. These are the facts, the difficult, unpalatable facts, ranging from the slight snub to the termite's delight, violence. We've talked of a lunatic fringe, dedicated to the proposition that all men are created for segregation. A fanatic fringe which you and I cannot accept as our America. Yes, it is the bombings and the riots, the angry, mischievous crowds holding back new tenants from the housing developments and projects. It is the act of violence which makes the headlines. But no matter how much the termites would have you believe it, these facts are not America. The house is strong, and the retaining walls are firm.
Wait a minute. These two are facts.
USA, 1949 to 1952.
Connecticut, Wisconsin, New York, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Massachusetts forbid discrimination and segregation in public housing.
Miami, Florida, November 1950.
National Association of Real Estate Boards votes to change its code, which pronounced it unethical for a realtor to introduce new races into a neighborhood.
USA, 1949-1952.
Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Cincinnati bar discrimination and segregation in urban redevelopment.
Discrimination and segregation barred in public housing in Hartford, Boston, Cleveland, Toledo...
Yes, these two are facts. The beginnings of a solution. Perhaps you're wondering how we let the termites into the house, or what the reasons are that they have not been driven out completely. And there are facts on this, too.
We are suffering from a housing shortage which started during World War II.
But we're catching up.
1,400,000 units, including projects, were started in 1954, an all-time building high.
Builders anticipate at least as many starts in 1955.
And yet, a housing shortage for the majority...
Yes?
...is a housing famine for minority groups.
But why do people let the termites into the house?
Why?
Yes. Why?
Why? Is never an easy question to answer. Throughout the country, housing experts, local governments, interested organizations have been engaged and are engaged at this moment in ferreting out some of the reasons. There are some facts on which most investigators agree.
There is no one universal effect of minority occupancy on property values.
That's ridiculous. Anyone knows property values go down when they move into the neighborhood.
A fallacy. One of many fallacies, but perhaps the most widespread of them all. Listen to the experts.
Generally, minorities are not able to enter communities except those which, by age, initial shoddiness, or other factors, are already on the economic or social downgrade.
And what about the good neighborhoods they move into? Why, the values drop right through the floor.
Only when householders panic and too many homeowners try to sell their homes at the same time. This is the primary cause of temporarily lowered property values after minority entry into a neighborhood.
There are some people, the few unscrupulous ones to be found in any business, who play upon the fear, the insecurity of honest homeowners.
In the real estate business, we call them blockbusters.
The blockbuster surveys the situation on the edge of a segregated neighborhood.
A very neat street full of houses.
He selects a likely prospect.
Interested in selling?
The prospect swallows twice and answers...
Why, no. Well, maybe. Why?
The blockbuster says a few gloomy words about the general deterioration of the neighborhood a street or so down and moves in with a bid.
I'll give you $15,000.
The homeowner knows he paid only $10,000 a few years ago. Incidentally, so does the blockbuster.
It's a deal.
A month later, the blockbuster moves a family of the minority group into the house he's purchased. Within a week, on the same street...
I'll give you $6,000 for yours.
Sold.
$5,750 for yours.
Well, okay.
$5,500 for yours?
Is that all?
Well, look, brother, this ain't such a hot neighborhood anymore.
There is panic in the streets. And the blockbuster smiles. A large, contented smile. Are the people on the street bad people? Of course not. Malicious people? No more than you or I. Then why do they respond to a blockbuster? Why do they play into the hands of the termites in the house?
Look, all we want is to live in a neighborhood that's a good place to live in. That's all we want.
That's all we want. But what makes a neighborhood a good neighborhood?
Good neighbors, of course.
And what's a good neighbor? Well, it's easier to find out across the back fences what isn't.
Did you hear that racket last night, the Smiths? They must have been up till 2 a.m.
Jonesy better get going on his lawn by Saturday. The place is beginning to look like a jungle.
Say, what's bothering Duncan? He hasn't waved good morning for a week.
have a right to be concerned about the character of our neighbors or the condition in which they keep their houses. The appearance of a house tells you a great deal about its occupants. But you cannot tell their skin color or religion. There is a neighborhood in Chicago, and its story is the story of many neighborhoods in many cities, in many states. A story worth telling, because it strengthens the foundation of the house. When Negro families started moving into Chicago's Hyde Park, Kenwood area, 40 homeowners got together in a meeting, a very agitated meeting.
But what should we do? I'd rather take a small loss now than a big one later.
He's right. It makes sense.
Well, just a moment. Just a minute. Just a minute, please. Now, let's not lose our heads. If we keep our heads, perhaps we can keep our houses, too.
Mr. Chairman, you haven't answered the question. What are we to do?
Do? Well, for the first while, let's agree on doing one thing. The best thing for the neighborhood.
Right, right. What's that?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
For the first while, the 40 neighbors of the Hyde Park-Kenwood area did nothing. Property values held. Then they got together again.
Now, friends, it's time to do something.
The local newspaper reported on the something.
40 residents of the area last night formed the Hyde Park-Kenwood Community Conference with the announced goal of community conservation through the promotion of friendly understanding, cooperation, and responsible citizenship.
The conference stated its conviction.
We believe that people of all races and creeds can and will work together to build a good community.
Newcomers moving to the neighborhood found an interesting reception.
Watch it, Joe. Them's dishes.
Moving in?
Yes, sir, I am.
We have a neighborhood conference here to try to improve the neighborhood.
Yes? Well, why are you telling me?
We'd like you to join. That is, if you're interested.
Interested? Mister, a team of wild horses couldn't keep me away.
The Hyde Park Kenwood Community Conference grew.
The meeting will please come to order. I'm pleased to announce that we now have 200 members. Will the secretary please read the minutes?
The conference met on January 7th. Present were 500 members. The matters discussed...
Mr. Chairman, I move we make arrangements for a larger meeting place. After all, we have 1,000 members.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to appoint some additional committees. I believe that we're ready to do a real job on the neighborhood. Our membership rolls now number 1,500.
...1,500 men and women of all races, religions, national origins, working not just to maintain a neighborhood, but to improve it. Americans, working side by side on common problems. Americans, getting to understand each other and each other's talents. Americans, making a good place to live in and strengthening the foundations of the house.
The Enforcement Committee will deal with violations of housing, building, or zoning codes.
The work of the Public Schools Committee will be with parent-teacher associations and the school board.
Our job on the Survey Committee is to supply the facts, nothing but the facts.
The Planning Committee has an important function, to study and suggest area improvements.
The committees went to work. The results were immediate, specific. It is almost 5 years since the citizens of the Hyde Park Kenwood neighborhood first got together.
Hey, Tom!
Hiya, what's up?
I had an offer on the house today.
Good?
High, very high.
You taking it?
No, turn it down.
Wait a minute, you're the guy that was so eager to sell out or get out.
That was 5 years ago, Tom. I wouldn't move now.
This is a real friendly place.
There are other friendly places, like the Hyde Park Kenwood neighborhood. Places in Los Angeles, Denver, in New York and Philadelphia, San Francisco, Seattle, New Haven. Neighborhoods where you'll find good people of all kinds. White, Negro, Mexican, Chinese, Japanese, Protestant, Catholic, Jewish. Neighborhoods which are a testament to the good sense of good neighbors and a blessing to the house we live in. For the house is a good one. The foundation is solid. The retaining walls are firm, and the layout was planned well. And if there are termites in the cellar, the people will do something about it. The people will take the lead.